This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 36, for January 1st, 2006. Here we are once again, all gathered, well, some of us, a couple of us gathered together for the first show of 2006. Let me introduce the people at the panel. And just say right up front, Patrick Norton couldn't make it because it's raining too hard. Kevin Rose couldn't make it because he left his lights on. But Robert Herron, undaunted by the weather or auto mechanical difficulties, he's here.
I rely on my Nissan.
How are things going on DLTV? Going well?
Good. DL.TV. Busy. We're prepping for CES.
Are you going to do shows down there?
Yeah, we're actually going to stream a live show. I believe that's the current plan anyway. So we'll be doing that.
Starts in just a couple of days.
Oh,
when do you go down? Sunday?
Exhausting. Actually, I'm taking off, I think, Wednesday morning.
Oh, you don't have to get down there that early then.
No. No, it's the show officially opens on Thursday. So I get down there a day before for the
parties.
Some of the pre-events too.
Yeah.
There's actually press events starting Wednesday morning. So I'll be going nonstop till Saturday night and then leave Sunday.
A man who is proud to say, he actually says it every year, he's not going to CES, but will end up going, no doubt.
No, I will not.
John C. Dvorak, dvorak.org/blog. Why not?
Well, you know, before Comdex folded, I would go to CES about once every 5 years.
I think it's more fun than Comdex, though.
Oh, yeah, it always has been, but I would go once every 5 years because you got to see everything, and then you go, you know, and nothing really changed that fast at the show.
Right.
And now, of course, it's absorbed some of the Comdex stuff, but it's still, to me, basically CES, which is a show you have to go to once every 5 years. So they're going year after year to this show, which is a miserable show. It's too big. It's hard to get around everything. It's hard to see everything or even see what you want to see. There's too many side events that keep you, you know, busy. You collect way too many cards, or far too many, as it were. Far too many cars that you can never you never follow up. Everybody you meet at this show, they say, oh, yeah, no, I'll do this, I'll do that. So you rely on them. They never follow through. None of the PR people follow through at this show ever. And I'm talking about 10 or 15 years ago into this show, or 20 even. They never follow up. So the whole show is a complete waste of time as far as I'm concerned. The other thing is nowadays, now I'm boring everyone stiff with this.
Boy, is he grumpy.
The other thing about the show is it's over-covered. So what am I doing there? I like to dig stuff up that people aren't, you know.
You can read it online. I think the internet, trade shows are a silly thing to begin with.
Well, right? The little ones that don't get a lot of coverage are worth going to because you find things out there.
It's always been really about seeing people and socializing, don't you?
That's really what it is.
There is a social thing involved, and Comdex used to fill that bill. CES doesn't have quite the concentrate. I mean, they have a lot of techie guys going, especially since the folding of Comdex. But it doesn't have the intense concentration of techies that Comdex had, where everybody was in the same business.
Right.
This thing's spread a little thin with weight, you know, too many car stereo speakers, chrome rims, strange phones. I mean, all kinds of weird stuff that, you know, that got nothing to do with me.
Right. On the right.
Aren't you glad you asked?
I am so glad. On the right hand side of the table, the right wing, we call him, of course, Alex Pixel from Lindsay Corps. Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps.
Hey.
Who can't take off his hat today.
He wore it all day. Once you put the hat on, you're going to put it on backwards. No,
I don't wear it.
Come on.
All right.
I don't wear caps for that very reason.
This is why, by the way. Put it on.
Nice playing to the camera.
You don't know how badly it was raining outside, folks, but it was monsoon out
there. Deluge.
Yeah. Deluge. And we also want to introduce a new member of the panel who's actually been here behind the cameras a number of times. Kenji Kato. Is it Kato or
Kato?
Sorry. I was thinking Kato, the Green Hornets.
Bruce Lee.
He is with, among other things, he's a Pixel Corps member, but also the Center for Homeland Defense and Security.
Can you imagine?
The CFHDAS.
Uh-huh.
I feel safer.
Kenji, good to have you on the TWiT panel today.
Could be a target. You
know. So we'll talk a little bit about the news of the day, but also towards the end you could start preparing. I want to talk a little bit about what's ahead for 2006. This is our first episode of the new year. And you roll your eyes, Dvorak?
I don't know what's ahead.
No one knows what's ahead.
None of us sitting at this table have a clue.
That I'm really enjoying, and you're going to mock me for this. Ray Kurzweil's new book, The Singularity. Oh. The Singularity is Near.
What singularity?
I'll do a quick synopsis of this, which will probably not be as good as it could be. It's a long, thick book. And Ray, you know, Ray, for those who don't know, is an expert in artificial intelligence. He's a very smart man, created this synthesizer for Stevie Wonder, speech synthesis systems, recognition systems, and wrote a couple of books on the age of spiritual machines, the age of intelligent machines. And his new one, the premise of a number of his books, besides the fact that he doesn't ever want to die, which I think taints him a little bit.
Yeah.
But the premise of this book and really of both of his machines books is that there's a singularity on its way any day now, next couple of decades, please, where machines become as smart as humans and then start designing themselves.
They have no motivation. That's the problem. No motivation.
Well, we tell them to.
They do what you tell them. Motivation when somebody slams a hammer into your hand, you can't do that.
So, he's ripping off 20-year-old Terminator story with Skynet.
It's kind of like that. Well, I mean, you know, it's been in science fiction for ages, but he says we're at the knee of the exponential curve, which now you got to admit, the rate of change has increased considerably.
Did you actually read this thing?
I'm reading it right now. It's pretty good.
You're actually reading?
It's actually quite entertaining. Oh, you know, I have to... Well, you and I interviewed Ray when The Age of Spiritual Machines came out.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, in Big Thinkers. And we tried to... I mean, I used what he calls in his book... And one thing he's done in his book now, he has a whole section on arguments against me. And he calls my argument the ontological argument, which is that there is something ineffable that's in a human being that no machine could ever duplicate. And maybe it's motivation, maybe it's spirit or soul, I don't know.
There's also a function called life that's somewhat...
Life.
Seems to be that.
But he says it doesn't matter when these machines are indistinguishable from humans. But the main thing is, once they start designing themselves, these things go very fast. He says it's just evolution.
Well, it's like him and the Bill Joy at the bar, you know, back in Aspen, wherever it was, and they're talking about how they're both worried sick over robots taking over the world and nanomachines turning the earth into a gob of goo because they get out of control.
Gray goo.
I wrote about this in Forbes some years ago, and I said, you know, worms have been trying to do this for eons, and they've been unsuccessful.
But they're not evolving as fast as nanotech will.
I've worked with a couple of people who do a lot of artificial intelligence. I think they vastly underestimate the human brain.
When it's going to match.
No, I mean, but someday. But I think this century I would be surprised.
I don't know. With some of the people I've met recently.
Too much science fiction.
I have no doubt that machines are going to keep up. Well, maybe them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but I think
it'll take out a good half of the population.
You know, it already had. They already have taken out a good half. But the half they've taken out are secretaries, people who did hand copying.
Gilgafrenchians.
Oh, please. For manufacturing, though, that robots were a must for that industry. I used to work in manufacturing, and it was 10 hours a day doing repetitive work.
Can these machines be if they work so cheap?
They're smart.
Hey, think about it.
One of the things he says to reassure you, and this actually made me laugh out loud while I'm reading the book, and maybe that's why I'm reading it because it's humorous, is machines will revere us as their biological progenitors.
Oh, for making a week.
We don't have to worry about
it.
This is Kurzweil's wishful thinking. He wants to be worshipped by someone.
And he also talks about wetware integration in the book.
Right. And that's key.
More and more hardware integration in human beings that will be chipped at some point.
Well, and this is where
that's possible.
I'd really like an address book and an image recognition that will tell me whose name of the person that's standing across.
All of that. Well, IBM had that in their research labs.
Why?
Because I'm always forgetting.
So what?
So
just
fake
it. His name is
John C. Dvorak. He has three children.
His birthday is for a long time. Here's the trick that I always use.
Read one of those memories.
I meet too many people, so I can't remember half of them. And I hate to be giving this trick away on the air, but, you know, just between us and it's only a podcast. You go and you say, hey, how you doing? I haven't seen you for – hey, give me your new card before I forget to ask. Because everyone always has a new card, right? Nobody ever has their old card. They always have a new card.
And they're all flattered that, yeah.
Yeah, because I want to get the card right now. So they give me the new card. Oh, and then I say, oh, that's so-and-so.
I'm using that.
When I go with my fiance, the rule is mostly that I'm very good at introducing myself. Oh, see, I'm going to ruin this. I'm doing the same thing. I'm very good at introducing myself. If I don't introduce you, I don't know their name. And then so she knows to jump. She just jumps out, shakes a hand, and I go, oh, I'm sorry.
No, I've told my wife that also.
Sometimes if you can slip in the, hey, you guys should meet. Why don't you introduce each other?
That's obvious.
Is it? You think so?
Yeah. And what happens when the PR guy says, oh, you know, I'm out of cards, John? Then what do you do?
Well, here's that PR guy never says that. It's never happened in history. And in fact, I think it's illegal. But anyway, the thing that's the real one that's a problem, and it happens to me because I always wear phony badges that don't have my name on them, just as a joke. Yeah. And people, I say, "Hey, how you doing?" And the guy recognizes me, and he looks down.
Hey,
and he
Sally.
Says, hey, hey, Alice, how you doing? And he's thinking, "Get a clue."
Gotcha, gotcha. You have no idea who I am. So the we'll talk some more about CES in a little bit because it does start this week, and I don't know, maybe there is something to look forward to. I'm sure Robert has some TV.
I'm excited.
HD TV stuff.
Have you been to CES before?
Many times.
Oh, of course he
has. How do you be excited? That's the question.
It's fun. You know what? It's a challenge. It's like 4 days of just nonstop grinding, and it's an opportunity for me just to meet and greet all the companies that I basically cramming about 2-3 months of meetings into 4 days.
Yeah, don't you always feel like crap though when you afterwards when you come home?
It's just very
get sick every time.
As soon as I step on that plane to come back though, it's just like
I just feel that bad that I should have been cleaning my office instead of goofing around in Vegas. Seriously.
So are you going to clean your office this week?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It'll be clean as a whistle by the end of the week.
I want to see pictures in the blog. He's going to find a corner and take a picture. Any TV developments you're expecting at CES this year, Robert?
Thin, flat, 1080p. Those would be the three main things.
But is there any 1080p programming?
Is it going to be 1920 1080p?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what 1080p is.
Yeah, okay. Well,
1920 by 1080 pixels progressive.
But you could do it. You could have a 1080. Okay.
You could do a worse one.
Yeah, you could do a worse one as long as the 1080p is part of it, right?
Well, that's the thing that sets it apart.
The resolution. I'm talking about physical resolution, though. It's 1920 by 1080. That is the format.
It wouldn't be 16 by
1080p. Okay. Am I missing?
Wouldn't be 16
joke?
By 9. No.
I mean, you could make it 1280 by 1080.
But then it wouldn't be
screwy thing again. Sorry I brought it up.
Actually, some of the plasma companies are finally catching up with the LCD people in terms of catching up to that 1080p resolution.
Most of the plasmas, the resolution's crummy.
Actually, the 42-inch nice has been the biggest complaint of mine in the last year, in that none of them are true high-definition devices. They're all like 1024 by 768.
And they upsample.
Right.
And they're just cutting off resolution, and you actually can see it and measure it. And
when is the 1920 1080p plasma coming out?
Panasonic announced two already in Japan, a 65-inch, 50-inch.
And they sell for what?
Supposedly that 1080p from Panasonic was coming to the U.S. this year for $10,000, which
it's always the number. It seems to be any new TV
that's
big is always $10,000.
At the same resolution is $20,000. So you're talking, if the plasma guys can get that display out,
that's going to buy one?
Half price. I need a new TV.
Why plasma? Why plasma? Though?
When I'm single, I have money.
Well, here's the question: is why a plasma screen instead of a projector?
See, I love front projectors. See, that's an absolute favorite of all.
I use a projector.
You blow the thing up to 100.
And we're not talking rear projection. We're talking the front projection.
Rear projection's gonna die. Like the U.S. is the only country left buying rear projection at this point, just because we need the big TVs and it's the cheapest way to go when you want a huge screen. But for me, more important than even resolution is the video processing on the back end that will take your standard definition content that you're still watching, your DVDs, your regular NTSC television.
The Faroujia chip or whatever it is.
Yeah, and actually there's a company called...
Is Faroujia still the best?
No. There's a company called Teranex. They make a processor called the HQV processor. I hope I got that. Either it's backwards. Either the company's HQV, Hollywood quality video.
No, anyway, that sounds right. I think you're right.
They have an amazing video processor that's based off of some military signal processing technology that's now...
Well,
it used to be in...
Faroujia is bought out. They don't...
But were they? They're not even...
They're owned by Genesis.
There were so many mergers in that area recently. But these guys are... arguably one of the best chips out there right now, but
what about
the cheapest devices are like $3,500 just for a box.
How about just a little tripler or line doubler that like the Samsung? Samsung has a 720p, DVD player. It seems to do a really nice job.
Yeah, I use that one. It's great. Yeah.
I run into more problems with those up-converting players. Either it breaks the 3.2 pull-down for converting 24-frame material, film-based material, into TV 30 frames per second. I have a $1,500 Denon upscaling DVD player. At 720p, it starts screwing up that cadence and causing all sorts of weird artifacts. But if I move it to 1080i for some reason, most TVs look great. And it somehow restores that proper 3.2 pull-down.
Let's not get too far into this HD discussion. But what other... I asked him what was going to be cool at CES.
And that's what he says. And TVs were all very enthusiastic listening to this stuff.
I'm excited. Better video processors, cheaper, flatter, bigger. That's the big thing. We're going to see some new players too.
Are they going to announce the little? Isn't there going to be an HD little pod player? It's not really HD. It's like 960 by 540.
The iRiver one.
iRiver is going to make an HD.
Is it iRiver?
I think iRiver.
There's a company that's working on one that's supposed to be like 960. It's got a 40 gig drive.
I still watch something that small.
Actually, iRiver already has that DVD resolution one that's got like a 7-inch screen on it with a 100-gig hard drive inside for about $700-$800. But wow, it looks expensive.
Hey,
but
you
it looks
know, awesome. I got like 1020 or 1280 by
Got 720p.
PC users have had high def for a while.
This is ridiculous.
So the big story of the week: Intel is dropping the Intel Inside. They're changing the logo, and the new tagline is "Leap Ahead."
Yeah.
Leap ahead.
Yeah, you remember that the commercial 1985 after the 1984
Apple commercial.
Where they leaped ahead.
Yeah, that was it, off the cliff.
Yeah.
Like lemmings.
Well, that's what that
leap
Intel's
off.
Doing.
So, and that what you said they're dropping the Pentium too.
Well, they're going to drop the moniker.
The name.
Right now, and then they're going to, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to switch the Pentium M name to the Core. Named.
The Core?
Yeah, and I...
Like the Marine Corps? The
C-O-R-E, and it's going to be the Core Solo and Core Dual, so it's kind of reverse of dual core.
Right.
But my thinking is it still has to do with Apple, so that Apple can use Apple Core.
Get it? I don't
Apple
think so.
Core, yeah. I guarantee you're going to see Apple... No, but Apple... Beatles was C-O-R-P-S. This is C-O-R-E, which is what an Apple Core should be spelled
should
like.
Be.
So they're going to have that... so it's going to be Apple Core, and this is going to be...
I know you're joking, but in fact, I think the fact that Intel's doing this at CES the week before Macworld is maybe an indicator that they want to do their rebranding now before Apple comes out with very prominent
smile.
Oh, and one more thing.
Well, I'm really curious to see whether I think a lot of people have been talking about this online, but whether Apple's going to do anything that really puts a lot of Intel branding on the machines. I think the whole Intel Inside thing was not going to happen.
But they might do Leap Ahead.
But Leap Ahead, maybe. You wonder whether that's
think
somehow
different.
Connected,
leap Ahead. Think Ahead. Leap Different.
Apple Core.
Apple Leap
Ahead.
The other
thing is that Intel's. You know about that Vive. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the media chipset that they're saying Apple will use.
If you go on their
V-I-I-V.
Website, they never mention Microsoft and the cool media center that they've got and the Xbox. There's a feud going on. And by the way, I have this prediction. That when Vive dies, they're going to bring it back and call it Revive.
That's two. I'm just marking them down.
That's actually been a huge bone of contention between Intel and Microsoft for a long time. Is that Intel is constantly trying to put added benefits into their chipsets to differentiate their hardware. Microsoft wouldn't write to it. They wouldn't take advantage of it.
Andy Grove. I remember we were setting up for an interview with Andy Grove on. I don't even know if it was Tech TV. It might have been the site. And he went off before the cameras were on Microsoft. And they've always been, because they do 64 or 32-bit chips, and Microsoft's still doing a 16-bit OS. They do 64-bit chips, Microsoft's still doing a 32-bit OS. I mean, it's always been that way.
There's another thing that's not well publicized, but for a long time, Bill himself held huge shares of AMD.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's a little known fact. But
like a hedge fund, kind of the personal Bill Gates hedge fund?
Well, remember when AMD had that one special Windows-only chip or something? It was all part of that thing. And I think he's always liked AMD's
stuff. Who wouldn't? What's not to like?
Yeah, well, that's true. But generally speaking, I don't think it pleased Intel by any means that he would
own. Fastest desktop PC right now is AMD-based.
Yeah. But I have to say, I'm excited about Yona. I think the dual cores are looking pretty good. I think that's going to be a good
chipset. Most people believe that Intel is two solid years behind AMD in dual core technology and just
has got to show us if that's the case. They haven't.
Intel has their new silicon laser technology, which is what is going to allow them to do smaller, basically, chip sizes. I mean, they can get down to the smaller nanometer size much quicker. With the silicon laser technology.
That gives you a light processor.
Yeah, the problem with that is that, that sounds good on paper, but in fact, the entire chip semiconductor business is not one company with one little technology, but it's the entire industry deciding that they're going to move to whatever, was.
Why do you say that? Why can't Intel?
Because if you go into one of the fabs, and you'll see there's like 40 different companies.
Intel has their own fabs.
No, I'm talking about the fab that has the conveyor belt, the fab that chops the chip, the fab that burns the chip, the fab
doesn't
that
Intel
washes
build its
it.
Own.
No, most of this stuff is from third parties. There's Applied. What's Applied Materials and all these about 10 major Japanese companies, Nikon, everybody. I mean, it's basically all pieced together. They have one or two proprietary elements on their line. But for the most part, it's all CMOS stuff that's done by a huge industry of makers. Intel doesn't build any of that gear.
One of the companies is out of Montana, if I'm not mistaken, and it actually builds the processing lines and the system that is used by Intel and some of the other companies.
I've got one for Kenji Kato, who is – working once again for the Center. What do you do for the Center for Homeland
I'm
Defense
the
and Security? What does that mean?
Technology and Media Manager.
That's not this. That's not Homeland Defense.
No,
not,
we are, what we are is we're a group that actually does a training program, basically for state and local, for firefighters, for governors, for executives who are making decisions about things from how do you deal with a natural disaster to how do you deal with a terrorist event.
You didn't make the one that Governor Blanco used in Louisiana.
No.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, no, what's funny is that we actually look at like those kind of things in the center, and we have different professors at the Naval Postgraduate Schools where we're based, and they actually look at different things that have gone on and actually try to put together best policies and practices, which we then teach the students. And it's actually free for all of our students. They get come into the program. It's free. They get a laptop. They actually get an iPod. So we actually do like podcasts. We do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, at least one guy's getting money out of it.
An iPod. Now,
well, what's interesting, though, is that these are working professionals. They're only there for a week, and then they go out, and they're gone for 10 weeks, and they're back for another week.
Is the video like training material on an iPod, too?
Yeah, we actually do.
Really?
We do video now on iPod. We do audio books. We also do a flash-based online learning that we've developed and all kinds of things. So
now we know the government will outsource things like that. Didn't know this. The White House had been outsourcing its internet design, its web page design, and apparently they're against federal policy, because the Clinton administration, seeing a threat here, made a federal policy that no government agency could use tracking cookies. But both WhiteHouse.gov and the NSA have been using tracking cookies, web bugs, you know, those little invisible web, and they're going back to web trends. As, I guess it's so they can analyze traffic.
Well, and a lot of government stuff is outsourced.
The reason to buy anti-spyware products.
Well, we know the government's spying on us now. The problem is they can do it without a warrant.
Do you really think a tracking cookie really means anything to anybody?
It doesn't bother me. I guess, though, when the NSA is doing it,
it makes me
a little nervous.
I guess maybe I'm over paranoid, but I think that, you know, this whole thing about the NSA, you know, paying attention to us, like it started. They're acting like it started in 2001. I mean,
they've been doing it for
have been doing it for the last 40 years.
It's illegal for them to monitor.
Whether
it's
illegal or not, it's just the assumption that it started in 2001, I think, is very naive. I mean, I'm not sold. I mean, they've been spying on us for
I don't know. I think that it's. I don't think it's. I think it's the precedent that scares me. I don't think it's the current.
Maybe. Do we know for a fact that they decided to do this, or is just part of the software package they bought that just happened to be built in? For example, I have a stat counter program that runs on my blog, dvorak.org/blog, and somebody was complaining about the fact that my site drops three cookies on his, because he was monitoring the cookie releases, and because I have three statistical programs that run on the site looking, I knew that.
You don't pay it.
So maybe it's just something like that.
Well, I think it is. In fact, Ari Schwartz, who's one of the associate directors at the Center for Democracy and Technology, said, considering the power to spy on us, the NSA has, cookies are not a big deal. But until Tuesday, the NSA website was creating cookie files on your computer that didn't expire to 2035 that would allow them to track you around the net.
They were erasable.
Yeah, you could erase them. Yeah, in fact, that's what happened.
You had to know they were there.
Somebody found them, I think, in a reporter.
You should just erase all your miscellaneous useless cookies anyway. You can all the spyware stuff.
Yeah, they all do it.
I do hate cleaning a browser out, though, completely, because if you use the system day in and day out, it keeps all your history.
Passwords.
You can go back, you forget an address or something, or some site you surfed a week ago. I hate having to just destroy all that.
Students who go through our program, they like that because they're like, okay, I have to come back online a week later and I forgot my password. So they want those sometimes. And we're like, well, you really want that? It's a security potential risk. And they're like, well, no, we want that. It makes it nice.
I'm with John on this one.
I'm more about securing the physical device, like make sure the notebook's password or the system I log into is password. But otherwise, once I'm in, I'm not that paranoid about much.
I pull a lot of stuff off.
Do you?
Yeah, when you use this, I have a couple different anti-spyware programs, and one of them it just says, you shouldn't. A lot of this stuff is just tracking. It's not like keeping your password and all some cool stuff.
Tools for website analysis, how people use it, are pretty amazing. The stuff we use at work, actually, you can tell what people are clicking on at any given moment in real time.
Oh, yeah. All that stuff's locked,
whether they're clicking on the link in text or the picture above it.
There's a new one. Have you seen Mint? I really am liking Mint.
Mm-hmm. Mint?
Have you looked at Mint?
No.
Mint? Yeah, look at Mint.
M-I-N-T?
Yeah, it's a new...
.com?
I don't know what the URL is. It's a new, relatively expensive statistics program uses PHP and MySQL. I think it's like $30. It's not very expensive. You should use, instead of these silly bugs that you're using, John, spend $30.
I don't use the, you know, I have stuff on the server too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like to compare because none of these things give you the same results.
Oh, and I find that Mint. You're going to love this because what Mint does is it gives you all
Mint,
sorts
a fresh
of real.
Look at your site, haveamint.com.
Yes. It smells minty fresh, doesn't it?
I'll check it out.
Mm. Yeah. Big security vulnerability. Actually, a number of big security vulnerabilities to talk about. The first one came earlier, about a week ago. Symantec says it has a shared library, which it uses on all of its products. Oops, little bug in it. So 63 different Symantec products, including all of the antivirus products, all of the, I mean, just basically everything, have this flaw in it. You'll have to update your Symantec products to make sure. What is the library it uses? I think it was a zip library. So
I don't see that story on here.
I just thought I'd throw it in.
Oh, okay.
See if you can think on your feet.
Duh.
All right, I'll give you another one. That one's old.
No Symantec that software one's old. In my system.
Yeah, I don't have any Symantec.
I don't have any either.
No antivirus software.
But even it, but no. You know, for instance, let's say uninstalled all that stuff. You probably would still have live update on there, right? Because that stays on no matter unless you explicitly. Well, that
No. I refuse to install anything from Symantec.
Why?
You can never get rid of it. No,
I don't like it. It's not the best in class anymore.
And it's just.
What do you like?
I don't use anything. I'll be honest with
you.
I
never use anything?
For antivirus. I use like Spyware Blaster that's
good.
Basically blacklists a bunch of stuff ahead of time.
Protects Internet Explorer.
It configures the browsers and keeps you safe that way. Otherwise, I'm just pretty careful
about
what I do. I use web-based email, so if there's a problem, it's on that
end. I think this is the dirty little secret, actually. A lot of computer wizards and security people don't like to say this, but they don't use antiviruses. If you know what you're doing, you don't get a virus.
I mean, I have a firewall on my router and the software firewall on my
computer. You don't open attachments.
You know, the thing is, I agree with that basically, except the thing is that if you do something weird, or if you have kids.
That's the problem. You can't have kids.
Or if you have a wife.
Shared systems.
But besides that, if you accidentally, something happens, something weird happens, and you get the virus, and you don't have some antivirus, you got to dig around, and maybe you can't, you know, you can
Nod
get rid
32.
Of it really fast.
That's my new favorite, Nod 32.
All right.
Are there viruses out there that say, like, I'm looking to really buy a network-attached storage device that I can just take some of the bad hard drives I have and just stuff them in there? But are viruses out there that can jump from, say, a PC on that network to that network-attached device and destroy information?
If there's not,
if it acts as a drive, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like
a drive. Another drive.
Probably
which
it.
Yeah.
If it's mapped.
That would be my only thing.
Doesn't matter.
A lot of viruses are network-aware now.
Just keep it back up. You won't have a problem.
Yeah.
Well, here's a new flaw in Windows, a big one. This is a big zero-day exploit, too, that was discovered just a couple of days ago. It's in the interpreter for Windows metafiles.
Why don't you explain what zero-day is to people out there?
Zero-day means that the exploits appeared pretty much at the same time as the exploit. The viruses or the hacks started almost immediately. It's an instant turnaround, and we're seeing a lot more of that. So you know, oftentimes these exploits are discovered months and months before, you know, ago, and they finally trickle out to the hacker community. This one, already there's over 1,000 websites using this exploit. So, and it affects all copies of Windows. We actually, if we talk about it a little bit in security now, if you want more detail on it. But the, you know, the Windows can display these graphics files. And you know, it has the thumbnail view. It has what's called a metafile interpreter. All those thumbnails are metafiles. A metafile can be put into, on a website or into attached to an email. It looks like a graphic file. It looks like a data file. And the flaw is that Windows says if the metafile is malformed, then it can provide you with an alternative routine. See, metafile is basically a vector graphic, so it's a computer program as it is.
This is interesting.
So there are sites out there, literally over 1,000 sites. Panda said it's one of the most serious vulnerabilities recently detected. It's all versions of Windows. Now, the bad news is there's no patch. The good news is it's a very easy thing to fix because you just unregister the metafile DLL.
But you don't have to click on anything. That's the drawback.
Exactly.
You just view
go to a
page
website.
And that's it. You get an email and it has it in it.
You
just view
it.
The email. That's all it takes.
Really?
And whether it's webmail or not.
It's a good one.
Hey, my Outlook and my Gmail are both configured to not display imagery.
Yeah, that's right. You should turn off preview pages in every email program because that's exactly.
So what kind of exploits are we talking about here that have been executed in the background?
Toolbar biz.biz, you want to try it? Or buy toolbar.
I mean, what is the end result to the user?
Well, they install malicious code. They can install
but
really arbitrary.
Have they done it? What's being installed? Malicious, what do we mean by malicious
code? I think,
code?
You know, I don't know, and I think probably what it is the same stuff that a virus is now installed, which is spam forwarders.
Symantec has actually had people reporting
bot networks.
Expanding the bot network.
Okay.
The best thing you could do is put a bot network on there, because then basically you own that computer and you can have it do anything you want, so you can install any software. Anytime.
DOS attacks to whatever.
A bot network, basically what it does is it puts a kind of an IRC server on your computer. It logs on to – an IRC client, rather, on your computer. It logs on to the hacker's IRC server and awaits commands.
Yeah.
Or they can update it remotely.
The machine becomes
new
a stooge.
Interesting
thing. That's right. So this is a pretty big hole. Microsoft hasn't really responded. I'm sure they'll do a patch, but the question is, will they wait till patch Tuesday?
So I have actually a question related. Now, how have you guys heard the rumors related to Apple being able to run Windows applications in the new OS 10?
Oh, is there a rumor circulating?
Yeah. It's building. That, you know, it's kind of the wine type thing where, you know, there's a bunch of patents that came
seamless
out
is what
last
I've been
year.
Begging for is Windows is
the,
seamless.
It's not
OS X.
It's not running virtual PC or anything, no, not dual boot. It's literally just opening the application in OS X as if it was an OS X.
It does that now with X Window. I mean, they learned how to do that with X Windows very early on. It's called seamless.
Well, that assumes that they have the code that Microsoft uses to make these things work in the first place. I mean, it's got to be more to it than just talking to the x86 chip.
Well, you think Microsoft is giving them a hand?
No.
Why would they?
That's never going to happen.
Well, you have to buy a copy of Windows still.
You have to own. You have to own Windows
for it still.
So it might be.
Yeah, you still have to. You have to.
Okay.
So here's the issue.
With Wine, do you have to?
Yeah. No, you don't. Wine has an API.
Wine doesn't work. That's the problem with that.
So here's the deal.
It kind of works.
On any new Mac, once they do an Intel chip, you'll be able to dual boot Windows. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that.
It's kind of a pain. Wouldn't it be nice if you're sitting there, you're running OS 10, you double click a Windows application and it opens.
Yeah.
There's a little window there. They did it with OS 9. You know, they did it with X Window. I don't see any reason why they couldn't do it with
Microsoft Windows. OS 9 runs actually in the background. You have to, in a sense, boot OS 9 into OS 10.
That's
so
true.
I think the same thing's probably
going to
happen
done that
with
way. So you'll have a blue box like you might have had a pink box or whatever the... What was the OS 9 box called?
What was funny is you used to crash. I used to have
Yellow
virtual
box.
PC, and you crash virtual PC, and then you just quit.
That was the
you
nice
go back
thing
to, back to OS 10. You know, you're like, oh, too bad.
So, but I think and what you're asking is, would there be that
well,
kind
the question
of vulnerability?
Is as these vulnerabilities start, well, they won't be vulnerable. They'll be in the way
the
that
Windows
virtual,
partition.
The Windows partition is vulnerable. The rest of the machine, and then you get into this question about whether do you just surf and do all your email on OS 10, and then do you use all the Windows applications you want in the Windows environment, and then you don't have to. Then you just don't have to deal with it, you know, and the question, you know, that's
I really think that I know that OS 10 is safer because inherently it's designed to be safer, but I think once Apple does an Intel, there will be exploits and there will be people trying to take advantage of this, and if they do a seamless window, you'll see people writing all sorts of stuff that's going to trick you into
it does that. I mean, if you go and you download like an EXE in the Mac OS and you have virtual PC there, you double click it, it instantly runs virtual PC if you've got it set up that way.
Right.
So you have the same thing. If it's closer, more closely integrated with the OS now, you get that EXE there. And it potentially could take off and run in the background in the Windows partition potentially. Mm-hmm. So.
If they get the overhead down, though, for that emulation, that'd be nice, cool. I think, for game developers, too. Mm-hmm. To be able to quickly port their titles over to the Mac platform.
Well, presumably there wouldn't be any porting involved at all.
Why would you want to port? Just run it.
Here's the question. It's good for Apple in some ways, but in some ways it's dangerous because for Apple, because what a lot of people have been talking about is that it may have PC developers be less likely to develop a native Mac version because they don't need to. You know, they just write a Windows version knowing it's going to run on the Mac, and so then Mac users might get the short end of the stick on some of the stuff.
I'm not in total agreement with that because people who write for the Mac typically don't write for that. I mean, it's a specialty. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to, as a specialist with the Mac environment, you're not going to say, well, I think I'm going to start writing for Windows because it'll be easier to kill two birds with one stone. Most of the people I've seen, and I don't want to offend anybody, that are Mac developers that started developing for the PC, the stuff sucks.
No, well, from a Mac point of view, it's the vice versa. The question is, there are some people who port their PC app to the Mac, but it's kind of a half port.
It sucks.
You know, and when they, but the question is,
they're not going to port, is what you're saying.
Who cares?
What difference does it make?
As long as it runs.
There's plenty of good Mac software. If it runs,
I just wondered. I just asked.
I think there's actually some of the stuff on the Mac is better than, I mean, on both platforms, there's stuff you wish you had on the other platform. But I have to say, I'm more often looking at stuff that I'm using on the Mac and saying, I wish it were on the PC, except for audio editing. Apple has just really dropped the ball on this. This Soundtrack Pro, just a I know you like it, Alex. Awful program. But Adobe Audition is on Windows is just fantastic.
We use that. What's the difference?
Big difference. One works it doesn't crash, for one thing.
Audition is a nice package.
Soundtrack Pro crashes. An hour and a half into an edit session, I told you this. It crashed. And
you're still mad about it.
I'm still mad about it. Well, it was only last week.
You should have saved.
That's what Alex said.
You can only blame the first 5 minutes on the computer. That's what I said.
I guess I'm spoiled. No, it doesn't.
What? It's crazy.
And the thing crashed silently, and everything I had done was gone.
Soundtrack Pro is more close to Audition now. The old Soundtrack was not, but Soundtrack Pro was
your complaint
lot
is the stability.
Stability, but there are also some weird. I guess it's mostly quirks.
Because I will say that I have found that
the
Soundtrack
UI is
Pro
pretty good.
Soundtrack Pro is less stable on a laptop than it is on a G5.
You said that to me, so I tried it.
You crashed it
immediately.
What?
No, the Mac doesn't crash.
Oh, just you're all
software. I'm just. Google Zeitgeist. Did you look? I like this. Every year Google does this.
What is a Zeitgeist?
What does it mean literally?
Any German speakers here? I don't think I've ever looked at it.
Sure, we can find it out.
Do with world view. Okay.
Yeah, basically that's it, right? What's the literal translation?
Well, that's what I'm going to find out.
So they do this every year. It's a lot of fun. It's at google.com. It's a press page. But the top searches, for instance, the top search on this baffles me. And Google News for 2005 was, any thoughts?
Well, by the way, Zeitgeist, German term meaning spirit of the time.
Spirit of the time. Oh, I like that. It's better than worldview.
Yeah.
That would be Weltanschauung.
Ah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's good. Now you mentioned it back to my college days.
So the top search in Google News of 2005, would you think maybe Iraq or...
Britney. Or
you see, you're close, but it's worse than
those
that.
Guys are
it's like Madonna, or
Janet Jackson.
Yeah. We forget that happened at the beginning of last year.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, didn't it? Yeah, it was Super Bowl. It was only
2005.
Wasn't it the 2005?
No,
Super Bowl?
Yeah. It was 2004. Four. Sorry, guys.
It was 2 years ago. Because Paul McCartney was the last one.
Paul McCartney was 2005, right, and it was the toned-down one where even if he took his shirt off, nobody would be shocked.
Yeah. No one would care.
2004, so we're still searching for it a year. Jeez. Then Hurricane Katrina.
That must be good.
Then tsunami, which happened December 26, 2004. So, I mean, this is... then the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. That must be an up-and-comer, right? Brad Pitt, number 5 on the list. And the top gainers of 2005, now this actually isn't too much of a surprise, MySpace.
I find this hard to believe.
MySpace. What, you think they're lying?
Yeah. Janet Jackson? Come on.
Maybe this is left over from last year.
I'm telling you, this doesn't make sense.
Number one search on Frugal, their shopping site.
iPod.
See, this is the, no, iPod. Come on, this is.
What, MySpace?
They just throw this
Aries, I don't know why Aries. What A-R-E-S was the top gainer in 2005 for searches? I must be something the kids are into. I don't get it. Let's see. You want to look at
Aries? MySpace?
Probably.
Yeah. We talked about that. Remember? You saw my page. You saw my MySpace.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, I discovered a new one called Yelp.
What is Yelp?
It's at PCMag.com. You can check it out this week's column. Yelp is a very... In fact, I was stunned by it. Because it's YELP.com for anybody out there.
It's great. I mean, how did they get that?
I don't know. They got lucky. But anyway, what it is like, because over the years, I've had two major complaints about two specific things. One is public reviews of restaurants. I think they stink because there's always a bunch of guys who are shills or people who just hate the restaurant.
So
or
even
the
like the Zagat guide, you don't like the Zagat?
No, the Zagat guide's fair.
That's pretty good.
It's heavily edited, by the way, no matter what they tell you. But and no, I'm talking about public reviews on the web.
Like opinions kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, you go in there and says, this place is the worst restaurant I've ever been to. It turns out to be the guy across the street writing the review. You don't know. Right. And the other thing that I dislike, I never really thought much of these social networks. What Yelp has done is put social networking and reviewing together.
That's a good idea.
So you have a million reviewers out there, but you can click on the person and see what their taste is like based on their other reviews. So it's almost like reverse engineering that computer idea that tells you, if you like this book, you'll like that one.
To me, the reviews on Amazon are absolutely worth their weight in gold. That's where, before I'll buy anything, I won't read Consumer Reports. I'll read Amazon. I won't look at PC Magazine. I'll read Amazon because those reviews are people using the product, and they're really right on.
Well, I don't know. I've seen vested interests on Amazon.
Yeah, but you can tell right away.
But this is even better.
How do we know this is invested interest?
Well, because when you click on this person, you can go and see everything they've reviewed, who their friends are, and you get a feeling for what this person's like.
All right, you can pretty much reverse engineer this person. Let's find something we all know. Maybe a San Francisco restaurant we can see.
And this is mostly San Francisco, it seems to me.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, Evite has something like it also now. You can set
Yeah, I know,
Evite
but you don't
profiles.
Get the you really you don't get the depth. I mean, we got people on here that are 500 reviews deep.
Here's a review of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, there's every, they
Actually,
review everything by the
there's
way.
There's 21 reviews of the Golden Gate Bridge.
They review dry cleaners.
It gets
they review
five stars.
Brands of beer. They review everything, bridge. But they also review a lot of restaurants.
I love that bridge.
Gourmet G writes, "There is little I can add to the accolades already bestowed upon it by fellow Yelpers, though I scoff at those who criticize it for attracting tourists."
Yeah, okay, some of the reviewers are a little corny. But
oh, wait a minute, here's one. Here's an ode to the bridge. "Hey, stud, how did you get to be so friggin' handsome? You're not like other bridges with that crazy orange dye job and your spectacular shoulders."
I'm telling you.
You know what? It's entertaining, too.
I'm telling you,
Yelp is at least as entertaining as Craigslist. Like, if you want to just waste time, go on Yelp and look stuff up.
Let me see some other. So I can see what else. I mean, I like this Kevin S. review, so I can see what else Kevin S. has reviewed.
Right, you can read all his stuff, and if he agrees with you and a lot of things, you can say when he discovers a new restaurant or bar.
Kevin's got good taste. This is basically replacing friendship.
Exactly, yeah, no, because we do not want to actually have to be with anyone.
Replacing friendship.
You know, that's all. I wonder what is friendship.
Don't go there.
Who needs friendship?
Really? No, never mind.
Kevin S.
It used to be Zeitgeist. Anyway, so you can waste a lot of time on this, but it's quite fun.
So he's got reviews of Crate and Barrel.
As long as he says Amici's Pizza is the best.
He actually reviews...
Actually, there's a little... North I ran into Beach. I was going through this thing. There's a thing called Little Star Pizza. Have you checked this place? That's supposed to be better than Zachary's.
Good.
All I got to say, Zachary's? It's all about North Beach. The North Beach
North
special.
North Beach is okay.
I think it's good
North
if you're
Beach
there.
North Beach
special.
Okay, in the place,
you know, but look
delivered.
It up. Look
he's
it
got
up.
A review of San Francisco International Airport.
Did he give it one star?
The
three.
International wing rocks.
That's the new section is really nice.
That's probably the best. The like Apple store in San Francisco.
And the rest of that
oh, no, I'm sorry. In Burlingame, 2 stars.
He didn't like it?
Didn't like it. Andronico's Market, 2 stars? I don't know. I'm not Kevin.
I haven't stopped going when
he does
stop
like
giving
the Gemini meteor
olives.
Shower, though. No,
yeah, I think maybe you get the wrong guy here. This guy's not going to help you.
I think this is it. So Yelp, huh? All right.
Anyway, check it out.
No, I think that's good. Social bookmarking, social, it's hard without Kevin here because he's kind of now one of the leaders of social news sites, but I never really thought that much of it, but I think that there's potential there. It doesn't seem like it's...
Well, this is the interesting combination that I thought was unique because they'd combined two ideas that were both weak.
Right.
Well, at Macworld, I just saw something about like a social networking software that works on Wi-Fi. So you can put down what you like, and then other people on the show floor, it will show you where they are.
Oh, I like that idea
and
for
so
a trade show.
You can go around and find like if you're looking
Slowly
for people or if you're looking for people that have similar interests, you install the software and it uses the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I would subscribe to Dvorak's RSS feed on the CES show floor. And then I would see the feed of where John is now, and you could rate it. And
that's what I like. People following me around in virtual world.
The cloud.
Jeez, you have to keep on moving. Cloud.
He's there. Go, go, go.
Somebody owns friendship.com.
I know.
It's one of those.
It's just one
selling,
of those. Yeah.
I will sell them. So Seagate bought Maxstor. Do we care?
No.
Yeah. Get rid of Maxstor. Well, not to get rid of Maxstor, but.
Maxstor was okay.
Yeah.
Their last standalone USB drives are quite gorgeous.
So One Touch, you like those One
Touch?
Well,
I never didn't like them initially, but the last one they did just before they got bought is really a hot looking box.
Yeah.
Actually, my son walked off with it.
It's a Jambo Networks.
That's what's
a social networking tool.
Jambo. Yeah. I think that's a very interesting use of. Yeah, social networking. That's for like real time.
But how's it going to work? Do you have it on a phone, or is it like a Japanese dating service, or what's? I mean,
it lets Wi-Fi connected users discover each other in proximity.
It's
been developed on a social networking tool,
absolutely,
to help people find industry peers, customers, friends, enthusiasts with similar interests.
But that's what they're
using
in Japan, right?
So in Las Vegas, they should turn it into some sort of a sex angle here.
Yeah.
We have a clean badge on this podcast. You notice that now?
Yeah. No. Yeah, I haven't gone any further than just use the word, by the way.
We are clean.
And that's the way to be, clean. By the way.
All of a sudden this appeared as one of the tags that you can use. It used to be explicit or nothing, right, on the iTunes Music Store. And all of a sudden this new tag, clean, appeared.
And then you know what the next tag we'll be using? Square.
I like it. I think we should have other tags. Square, clean, well-groomed.
Funky.
Funky, bad hat.
Round.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, I think we could... Did you notice that this year is going to be 1 second longer?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been making lists. I've been making lists of what I'm going to do in that last second. Yeah.
Steve Martin wrote a hysterical blog entry for Arianna Huffington's website in which he says it's a conspiracy that the Republicans are all upset about the extra second because the Democrats are going to use it to hate George Bush for 1 second more this year. I'm not doing it justice, but it's a very funny piece from Steve Martin. His first, as far as I know, his first blog entry. I don't know if he's going to be a blogger or if that's just a one-off deal, but it's very funny. Cinema tickets sales slide big time.
It's the third just a
straight
trend.
Year in a row. Since 2002, that's the last year in which there was not a decline, a total of 12.6% decline in ticket sales.
Well, and it's the lowest attendance since 97, if I'm not mistaken.
Why? You know what? I bet you that doesn't apply to Los Angeles. I mean, compared to the Bay Area, theaters in L.A. were so much better compared to it's like garbage.
You mean the quality?
Quality.
Really, in San Francisco, I mean, I know a lot of people aren't listening there, but San Francisco, the Venice 1000 and the Metreon are pretty much the only places to watch a movie.
Oh, no, no.
Everything else is closed.
The MPAA says it's BitTorrent. Yeah. It's all about BitTorrent. So
these guys blame everyone but themselves. The show for people out there who like to watch insider stuff, which is you might, since you listen to this podcast, is Sunday Morning Shootout. It's on AMC. It's at 8:30.
Like
and it has Peter Goober and Peter, who's get mad at me now, but he was the editor of Variety. And they sit around groaning about the movie industry. But the thing that Goober keeps pointing out is that the theater experience is deteriorating.
Right.
You have to watch commercials before they show the movie.
I think the commercials is the number one thing. You know, you just feel like it's 20 minutes. Sometimes I get in there. I can't even remember what movie I went. I'm waiting to watch. It's like a surprise.
20 commercials. It's unbelievable they have the gall to do that.
I think Kong a couple of days ago was like a 5-hour. They had a 3-hour movie and a 2 hours of commercials. It's like your whole day is shot.
Oh, they had you trapped, though.
They got you.
The advertisers love that environment.
Well, I know, but I think that's what's causing it.
The names of the advertisers and then boycott them.
Do it. That's a good idea.
Well, I do think, though, that I think that it's that type of thing. It is. I mean, the commercials are making a huge difference. Whether people think about it, like, oh, I'm not going to go to the movie anymore.
You're right. What's
I think
point?
There's an underlying like discomfort that it creates. Going, oh, I gotta.
But there's other things. There's demographics. There's the aging population. People are nesting to. 911, nobody wants to go out anymore. I mean, there's a lot of other things.
When I was living in L.A., we had some sweet, sweet theaters. Now, you could do everything from reserving a specific seat
The bridge
to having drinks served to you.
In London, it's the theaters a lot.
And some were really hardcore.
So it's not the movies. I mean, DVD sales aren't down. DVD rentals aren't down. It's not the movies. It's the experience.
Well, I think it's the experience. I do think it's also the quality of what we can get at home now between projectors and plasma screens and everything else. I look at movies now and I go, I literally think about them. Is it going to be a big experience? Is it King Kong or is it Narnia or is it Lord of the Rings or whatever? I want to go see that.
As far as color and dynamic range go, you can do better in your home.
By the way, it's Peter Bart is the other Peter. So.
Thank you.
I only go see maybe personally, two or three movies. Yeah, well, movies that you know are going to be interesting on a big screen.
Right, and it's just too expensive.
On a big screen.
Yeah. It's too expensive to go to every little movie when I can watch it on a 100-inch screen at home.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Although you wish you could pause King Kong. Because it's really two movies jammed together. I don't know what Jackson didn't want to do another trilogy. I don't know. But as soon as you know they're going to New York, you want to pause.
It was so funny.
There's the island part. There's New York part. It's two movies.
Yeah. Right at that break, in my theater. I kid you not, 15 people stood up. Yeah. Right when they were going back to New York, 15 people stood up, ran out,
we'll
and then ran back
tomorrow.
They needed that little break.
As do an intermission like they used to do with big movies.
They used to
movies.
Do that. That's right.
But especially anything over 3 hours, they'd stop
in concessions. Would probably go up, you would think.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It would.
Doesn't make sense to me.
The best special effects, I thought, in King Kong. I mean, obviously, the King Kong's amazing. By the way, Andy Serkis, again. The guy who did Gollum.
Did you hear about what he went through?
Yeah. Was it a ape suit? No. What was he?
He was in a motion capture, but the interesting thing was he really wanted to go to Rwanda because that's where all the gorillas are.
He wanted to see the real gorillas.
He wanted to see them. Peter Jackson thought it was too dangerous to go to Rwanda, so he wouldn't allow him. He said, we won't pay for it. We won't send you. Serkis, he just used his own money and flew out on his own and went to Rwanda.
From there.
Yeah, he told
them they wouldn't let him.
You know, and he went out there and spent a whole bunch of time looking at where, you know, watching the gorilla so he could get it accurate.
Unlike Gollum, who really is in the movie at human size, so he could actually act with the actors. Obviously, he couldn't act with the actors when he was making King Kong, right?
So he had these big extensions coming off of his arms to replicate the forearms.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he had extensions so that he'll move correctly.
But it's all motion capture on a stage, and then they then put him in later.
Just like you, when you remember you used to do that character.
Yeah, Dev Null. Yeah. I was in the other room. Soledad, you know, wouldn't let me go within 20 feet of her, so I had to go in the other room. But to me, the best, as good as those special effects are in the battle, of course, with the Tyrannosaurus is the fourth. That's pretty cool.
That looked cool.
That's pretty cool. But I thought the special effect I liked was Times Square in the 30s, which was amazing. You would like that because I know you're a fan of old stuff. It was like seeing what Times Square must have looked like in the 60s. And there's snow. And
30s.
There's 30s, yeah.
Really great mat work.
It was beautifully done. And that's a mat, right? Because they had some live action.
It's a digital mat. So there's probably very little live action stuff. Maybe the bottoms of a lot of the buildings so they don't have to key everybody.
This will be a DVD. But outside of that, so you can see how they did all this stuff.
Stop, frame it.
Yeah.
Well, generally just to see how they did it.
Generally when you see those, what they do is they build the first floor. First to maybe second floor max, and then
as sets,
so that you don't have to key everybody against the green, and then they just extend everything up above it. You
know? But they had ice and snow Now you said the ending. Now don't listen. Who hasn't seen it here?
I haven't seen it, but I don't care.
And Robert hasn't seen it.
It's a surprise ending. The monkey. He turns out to be Bozo the Clown. No. Surprise ending.
You know what's different from the original movie is this isn't a spoiler, but she really loves this guy. I mean, like, the ape is not like a puppy dog. Yeah. You know, she loves him in a man woman fashion.
So you're thinking there's a bestiality angle?
It's a little creepy.
Really?
It's a little creepy. Good. And then
that Peter Jackson seems
then
like
there
a
was
weird
the rumor
guy,
floating
the
around.
The
rumor
is
he's into hobbits, man.
That the ending is so close to the original film. That there was a rumor that he actually had an alternate ending where she dies in the
with the ape.
Dies with the ape.
That's what you were looked. It looked like they were going up to that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the tension, the way it was built,
they
looked like she was going to die.
Oh, it was scary too. So. That was the other thing. The special effects were well done. The bugs and the heights were really terrifying.
I have to admit, it made me really uncomfortable when they were on top of the Empire State Building. It made me feel uncomfortable. It was so big.
Vertigo.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really. It was really well done.
It was very realistic.
It was really
so. That's one where they should be making some good money on that one. Yeah,
and they're doing okay.
You know who's making?
Although
money?
They made, I think that thing cost. I think I saw the estimate on IMDb was $207 million.
It was close. No, I thought it was closer to $3 million
with marketing maybe. But I think the $207 million was the production.
But they'll make that back.
What? They'll make it back, especially in DVD. Well, and here's the thing: this is what Jackson understands really, really well. What Lucas understands really, really well is. It is all about the features on the DVD to really turn that thing over. All of the record-setting DVDs are all ones that are feature-laden.
Really?
Just about
like
all of them.
Two-disc DVD sets?
Okay. Yeah,
For me, it's just full bitrate for the whole movie. That's what I hate. It's like the Big Lebowski when it was first released. Mm-hmm. They put the PanScan and the widescreen format on one
side. They've pretty much gotten away from that.
Such a video nerd.
And who knew?
But I think they
end up buying the 20th or 10th anniversary edition to get the full
he's off the show.
All you want is a two-hour movie on four discs.
No,
so
no,
it's not compressed.
The full.
They don't. I don't think they really do the double disc thing anymore.
HD. They don't need to. Yeah. They've got dual layer. You'll love these HDs though. Yeah. They announced they're coming in January, right?
Yes.
In fact, you'll see them at CES.
Have I?
Blu-ray?
I know a couple of things that I will be seeing at CES that I can't really talk about.
What?
And
John's not going. It's okay. You can tell him.
No way. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. There's no one listening.
Just give us a hint.
Nobody's listening.
Can we ask you questions?
Yeah, 20 questions.
No, I mean, basically the PC is going to get a lot closer to TV.
Well, and that's going to happen. That's going to happen at CES, and that's going to happen at Macworld.
You think Apple will do a media center?
For me. Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
There's actual product announcements. It sounds like he's trying to...
He knows too much.
He's sidetracking us here.
Well, he's signed those NDAs. We don't do NDAs.
What NDAs? You're signing NDAs? That's a catastrophe.
Yeah.
I put a little clause.
John taught me that right up front. Never
catastrophe.
Don't sign. Never sign. That you tell me you won't sign him. They say, well, okay.
I'll tell you anyway.
They do. It's hilarious.
Okay, if you insist. So, you know, I'll tell you who was making money this year. It's the online retailers. Huge jump for Christmas.
That makes sense.
25% increase over 2004, according to ComScore. 30% according to Nielsen Net Ratings, because they include auction sites like eBay.
It only takes about...
Huge jump.
Yeah, it only takes about 10 minutes in downtown San Francisco to know why. I mean, it's just so...
It's also the selection. These big stores, right, yeah. You know, whether it's a Macy's or anybody else, now they use centralized buyers. There's nothing personalized about the store. I mean, I was ranting about this in some column about how, you know, the only good thing about centralized buying, because, you know, all these stores used to have their buyers and they'd be local, you know, they'd buy stuff for the locals and people would go in there and buy cool things. Now it's all bought, everything's out of New York. The only good news is that if you shop at these big chains in Florida, you can buy these great expensive wool suits that are perpetually on clearance because nobody buys
suits in Florida.
Nobody buys suits in Florida, but they have to. But these centralized buyers put them in there anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah, I always buy a lot of clothes now.
This is, I think, even maybe a more telling statistic. Last year, 10% of American households shopped online. This year, 33%. I mean, that's a big
job. Comfort factor too of using online.
Yeah, you don't hear people saying, shopping. "Is it safe to shop online?" You don't hear that.
I remember the very first thing I bought.
I
do you?
Yeah, it was a mouse pad. Just to see if it would work, if I could put in my.
How long ago was that?
90.
Gosh, I don't think I remember the first thing I bought on
my
Amazon.
My first experience was
that's
Amazon.
That's why I
bought one
four
book.
Times. I've seen it a couple times.
And the first, it showed up from Amazon, I remember, in like 90, you know, 7 or 98 or whatever. And then I bought like 100 in the next 2 months.
I think
it was just like, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so great. I never have to go back to a bookstore.
Actually writing back and forth to the actual person who owned the store because it was a pretty small mom and pop operation.
Kenji, do you remember your first online
software.
Purchase? Software.
About software.
Yeah. How about you, John? You don't.
I buy like frames and you know.
You buy frames?
Yeah, frames by yeah. The prices are fantastic.
Glasses frames or picture frames?
No, picture frames.
Oh, be darned.
Where?
I got the name. I mean, I did a lot of research to find this one frame shop, but they have like the best deals.
Do you send them the stuff to get framed, or
you just get
the frame?
You get the pieces, and
you do your own matting.
They tend to. No, I have a local guy do matting. I don't want to do any of that stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, I find that the only place that I actually go buy stuff is actually other than clothes. I don't, you know, I think they probably said that in the article. That's not the thing that grows.
No,
as much.
Clothes and shoes are not.
But outside of clothes, I think the only place that I go buy stuff instead of going online is actually the Apple Store. Because when I walk into the Apple Store, the people actually know what they're talking about. So if I don't know exactly what I want, you know, I'll go in there. But outside of, I find that the Apple Store online is just a pain because there's too many things.
I buy shoes online, but I bought one pair, and when I sent it back to the fit, and now I know that fit. And I get great shoes. I get great shoes from LL Bean. Not these. These are
Vans online.
$30. They must be made by slaves in China, but they're cheap. But they're good.
Well, you know the dirty little secret that eventually is going to break it loose for the online guys, and it always cracks me up. People were originally, and they still are, somewhat concerned about security. You know, I don't want to put my stuff online. You know, I would be careful. I'd rather call an 800 number. But if anybody does any marketing, you'll know the first thing you do, all the 800 number companies nowadays, you cannot even get an account with one of them to do the work for you unless you have a website. And when you call the 800 number, they bring up the same web page that the person would have been doing.
And do it themselves.
And they type into the same exact page. It goes right over the internet just like anybody else.
And
it's hilarious.
Farmed out to incarcerated people.
And they will not do
it. Yeah, but it's a prisoner doing it. But
well, I what I never understand is I feel far more secure.
Well, you are far more secure.
Far more secure ordering off the web than giving my credit card to the waiter at a restaurant.
Walks off.
I mean, you know, that's the thing is that it's way more secure. I mean, I'm much less likely.
Yeah,
you know, that's
so
the
that's
thing.
Laughable.
It's just insane.
Just curious if you guys could figure out the top, say, five retailers online this year. Number one,
Amazon.
Number two, don't look. He's cheating. eBay.
That makes sense.
Right. Now, this is a surprise. Brick and mortar, Walmart, number three.
Really? That doesn't quite.
Yeah, they're moving in now.
They're moving in.
Well, they also do a lot of affiliate stuff. They're very aggressive.
I'll never walk into another Walmart again.
Then Target.
That surprises
see,
me.
Target
rocks.
The one thing I love about Walmart.
Guess the last one, Best Buy.
Best Buy, yeah. Very good. Best Buy in Circuit City.
The thing I actually love, I finally had that experience where you could check out a Walmart without actually talking to anyone. It was awesome.
Okay.
I went into a Walmart, I had my stuff, and there's
what do you mean without talking to anyone?
There's no checkout person. I love that. I was like, I did it all.
That
I don't,
makes me
I'm not
nervous.
I just like to be on my own. I want to do my thing.
I keep looking at that at the grocery store.
In the South, in Georgia especially, but most of the Southern states, they have most of the grocery stores.
Yeah, Piggly Wiggly. You just
have a whole slew of these, like, check yourself out. And I go through this thing, and I'm like, watching these old ladies, I'm thinking, I don't know, why don't I just go to the checkout woman and let her do the work?
You know
what am I doing
needed?
The work? Am I getting a discount?
Are the home improvement stores like Lowe's and
they do a lot of that.
Anytime you need to go in there for one item, and it's a 4-hour experience because there's I've never seen a busier environment than this home improvement stores. And those automated checkouts, those situations are just awesome.
For the first time ever, Neiman Marcus and LL Bean sold more online than they did from their catalogs or their phone.
I believe the LL Bean. I'm surprised. surprised by the Neiman Marcus. Yeah.
Very interesting. I think this is a big
yeah, it's huge.
Change.
It's huge.
Well, do they still send out the magazines and then people look at that and then go
LL
online?
Bean.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people do that.
I get the catalog, I browse it, but I end up buying online. And right. I it's not like looking at a page in the catalog and then going online. I browse the catalog, but then I go online without the catalog and I still end up, you know, I mean, I buy a lot of stuff online now, actually.
Like what?
Yeah. Everything.
Pretty much.
Clothing, a lot of clothing.
I'm this close to going
books
with Safeway.com
for sure.
For my groceries.
My
friends keep recommending
it. It's generally pretty good, but you got to buy at least $50. And a lot of times things will show up and they'll just go, you'll just get a note that said, it wasn't available, so we didn't pack it.
Now, one of the things LL Bean did is they free shipping online. And that's one of the reasons people started.
You look like an LL Bean guy.
I am an LL Bean guy.
Amazon's done free shipping for a long time. Yeah, most of their items. I mean, it takes a while, but.
The old preppy. And
yeah, they sent it by horseback.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the slow stuff. So
I just want to do a couple more real quick stories because I really do want to get your predictions for 2006. The CIO who was backing Open Documents in Massachusetts quit.
Yeah.
He quit. The investigation finally took him down, and he said, you know, and which means probably Massachusetts will go back to Microsoft Office just like anybody. They all come back in the end, don't they? Sony settled their rootkit class action lawsuit. I mean, not a big settlement. You know, you get
all
like
of them
seven,
or one of them.
You can get like $7 and some change, or you can get like three CD or three downloadable music albums.
Yeah,
something the wacky that I'll never.
And they claim again that they're recalling all the CDs with this rootkit on.
But
it.
They're still there.
The Sony stores are still selling them. So.
That's a collector's item. Hang on to it.
There's a great somebody's put. I'll put a link on the show notes online. A insert that was in his Coldplay CD. Of the saying, you know, copy protected for your protection. It was really, it was a plan. Oh, I have to say, you'd be good for your blog. I'll send it to you for your, to protect your experience.
People, hold down that shift key when you're putting those discs in.
So 2006 is here. I know, you know, predictions make no sense, especially in technology. Do you used to do prediction columns?
You know, I always ridiculed them when I did them myself. And it's because I always believe that only person that's accurate with these predictions is someone that has insider information and they're kind of saying, yeah, I guess what's going to happen next year.
Everybody does them.
But I mean, there was no, I mean, the only, what it's like, it's
better, faster, cheaper.
Yeah. And everything's a trend. I mean, so, you know, we're going to see more blogs and we're going to see more podcasts. And
wasn't it Wired Magazine that just quoted you for saying that, as John Dvorak said, Apple would, what is it, 18 months and then Apple would switch over to Intel processors?
You predicted that?
Yeah.
Well, and he was off by a couple months, and they were like, it's one of the top-rated predictions
of
2005.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good, John.
That's according to
how did you know that? Did you have inside information? Or
it was just logical. Most predictions, if you do them like that, are logical. What happened was Markoff was telling me about how Steve Jobs kept meeting with the top Intel guys, and and they kept having these meetings, and they were cozying up to each other a little too much, and then Steve gave a speech, and one of the Intel CEO or somebody was sitting in the front row, and it just seemed a little suspicious to me. And I also felt that it was a smart thing to do because they've been having battles with Motorola. So I made this prediction, as it were. And, you know, I was actually off a little bit, and I had some concepts that didn't go the way I was thinking, but it, you know, basically they were
he's
a
too
switch.
Honest. Most people would be going, yes, I predicted it.
There's nothing to predict.
Yeah, any thoughts about what might happen in 2006?
I think it's once again a trend. I think that we're going to see the battle over online media distribution will really hit heat by second half of this next year. I think, you know, between Google, Yahoo, Apple, AOL, and Microsoft. I mean, those are the five big ones, and I think that they're all going to push hard. I think where most people are going to start to be able to, either through Google or through Apple or Yahoo especially, be able to put their own content up there and charge for it, you know, and, you know, they'll make $10 on it, you know, $15 here and there. But the point is I think that a lot of them know that that's the angle. I think you're going to see this big separation where standard definition television is kind of in this evil middle. Everyone's looking, I mean, when you talk to TV stations, everyone's talking about everything's going HD and broadband. So things that belong on broadband, I mean, things like talk shows and things like that stuff, they're looking at broadband. Things that need to look big, they go to HD.
They do have the capability with this new digital signal to do 4 or 5 NTSC signals when they're not doing HD TV signals.
Well,
on
that's
it.
What our local PBS, they have 5 sub-channels, or they have their HD channels on 9.1 and then 9.25 for all standard def.
Yeah,
in good.
And then when
quality.
When it's time for the big HD event, you'd go all H. You use up all.
But a lot of them are. I think a lot of stations are looking at SD as kind of a thing of the past for broadcast.
All HD.
You know, they're not to this year, but I mean, they're all moving away. They're, when you look at their infrastructure, I mean, they're.
That makes sense too. You know, I think once you start really using away. HD, you don't want to watch SD signals, even on shows like this. You kind of just get used to higher
if you
quality.
Could, you images. Convert those to a nice progressive format, that'd be perfect for web distribution. Then they're right. not as big or. Bit heavy, so right. you can move those around pretty easily, and you know.
But what do you see for
utilize that content?
You know, one of the things I follow closely is IPTV, and mainly because it's a worldwide phenomenon that's not taking place here in this country at all. In fact, I have this my IPTV daily website. It's interesting because it keeps you know real time tabs on who's watching, and if you go to the site or on the site, you know, like it's so many people online. It's just like there's nothing during the day, but at night when the Europeans
it's international.
Are on, man, boom, yeah. the numbers just go skyrocketing.
But you're talking about, but it's almost like a standard TV model over IP, right? I mean, that's
it's essentially what it is. Yeah, but it's like
so they don't have the infrastructure; they use IP.
Yeah, you
but,
use IP.
But
so you,
that's
you
not what we're talking about here.
I think
in the States.
When we're talking about broadband,
a completely new form of distribution.
Yeah, when here. We talk about broadband, though, I mean, people don't want to. People are going to get really tired of having to show up at some time
no,
to watch anything.
Forward. It's a TiVo.
You know,
it's,
everything
yeah,
is going to be
story. You know, the way I saw it, like I guess I've talked about this before. I'm in Sweden, and they're showing me IPTV casually since it's available there, and they put me in front of a television set on which is hooked to the internet at a 30 megabits per second rate, and they give me a gun and say, "Here, check it out." And I'm flipping through it. That's I thought like, I was on cable TV. I thought I was on Comcast, but it was all HD, and it was just clicking through. Like
but that's not a revolution. That's just a minor infrastructure change. It's like well, said, it's like,
I don't think the Comcast people would think it's
well, they
too
don't
minor.
Think so. But it's like VoIP. In you know, when you call Mexico, you use internet telephony, not you know, because they're packetizing it instead of a switched network. But this is, I think, for in the States, when we say IPTV, we mean a really much more
I think
drastic change.
Yeah, the idea
model.
Of broad, you know, being able to download stuff, watch it, you know, when we want to, how we
no,
want
I
to,
think,
on
well,
whatever
I think
we
that's
want to.
Where IPTV is headed.
Yeah, BitTorrent.
Oh, I definitely
I mean,
think that,
a perfect,
yeah.
I mean,
it's what's happening
I mean,
right now
the cable
with BitTorrent.
Guys have been talking about trying to go. You know, the problem is forward and backward time switching on in real time on the cable.
Can't do it.
Is what they, no, you can do it. But it's like video on demand stuff, which a little
right.
chews up a lot of resources.
Right.
But you know, the fact is, say you start the Letterman show. And you missed the first 10 minutes.
You can go back.
You can go back on the cable in real time.
Well, you can do that in Comcast VOD now. Yeah. Yeah.
You can go backwards in time?
If the program is provided.
Yeah, I think you can. Maybe.
I don't think so. I think.
Well, you don't watch it. First of all, you don't watch it on a schedule. You start playing it. But you can rewind.
The on-demand. Yeah.
The on-demand stuff.
Yeah, but I'm talking about TV, regular TV
on schedule
shows.
Stuff. Yeah, TiVo schedule. Style. No.
Yeah. But I just think the whole concept of schedule is going to go away.
I think we'll see this year somebody come up with a really nice software app that maybe ties into a distributed database just so to make it you can select the shows
or content
you want,
aggregate
it for you
easily. It just seems to me that I should be able to watch last Tuesday's Letterman show on demand, like now.
You should.
Well, you can't. I mean, you can watch like the monologue part through iTunes right now. You can go.
I don't want to
it.
Do the iTunes thing. I want to watch the whole show, and I want to watch it from last week, like last Tuesday. I want to watch
well,
it
that's just a, that's
now.
Easy. You're halfway well, there.
I have to admit the one thing
I
that
think
the,
we're halfway there.
Well, you got to get CBS to go along with it. That's the only issue, really.
I mean, the thing that I have to admit that I've gotten kind of addicted to buying shows on iTunes, and and the thing is, I got into Surface. And I watched
Surface is good.
I tried Surface once. I tried it
first
once.
Episode.
And then I got two. Yeah. And then I just bought the rest. I just went, you know, yeah. I just bought them all. And so I'm sitting there biking, you know, watching them one after another. And what's,
wait a minute,
what's,
you're riding your bicycle?
I stationary bike about an hour and a half a day.
That's
so,
scary.
You know, I have to lose.
And you're watching
I'm getting married. I have to lose 20 pounds. And so
you're
I'm
getting married, so you have to lose 20 pounds?
Yeah, I decided I want to. I just wanted to have good pictures.
What a TV in front of the bicycle.
So anyway, well, no, here's the worst part is, here's you know, here's the thing.
You'll gain it right
back. There is a TV.
He wants to fit his wedding gown.
Yeah, you know. There is a TV on my bike, but I don't want to watch cable. I want to watch the stuff I want to watch.
Right.
And so what happens?
Watch a little screen. Why don't you set up some rig with?
Because it's at the gym. It's at the gym.
Oh, at the
yeah.
Gym.
So I have.
Station, you got the kind of money that can have your own gym
right.
at home.
Anyway. Anyway. So the
he doesn't even own a car. You
yeah.
Know.
Yeah. You got to get. Yeah. So
chauffeur.
Yeah. Exactly. So the but the. So I watched my little iPod though, and you know, like last night I was, you know, anyway, so I started watching Surface and I go boom, 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 boom. And suddenly I'm watching like two a day you know, while I'm working out because I, you know, about an hour and a half.
It's a pretty addictive
show. I get to the end and I go, and then I have to slow back down to broadcast. I have to wait now every week for the next one to come out. And then Lost is even worse. It's been like 3 or 4 weeks since they put out they put out another Lost. It's, you know, and
I think that this is happening with the TV shows on DVD. People are conditioning
people. We just grabbed a whole series. My son is a collector of like interesting sitcoms, especially ones that have been killed by Fox, not to mention like the Serenity
Fox
show.
Fox kills all the best
but
shows.
But the best one is Wonderfalls.
Wonderful.
They only showed it for 4 weeks, and there's nine in the can. There's like 13 or 14 episodes. It is a terrific show.
See, I don't think people are going to watch network television much longer. They're just going to watch the DVDs.
Well, we've already started with 24. We've stopped watching it this year. We literally watched 24 one-year offset.
Once you've started watching shows without commercials, it's very hard to go back.
Well, we still watch Alias in real time, but I put it on the TiVo device, and then we
fast forward,
plow through it, which has got to be
the best
these guys
news
crazy.
For podcast advertising. That's what I say.
Maybe.
We have a little poll on our site for our listeners to see. I think that probably what we're going to move in that direction of adding some form of advertising.
Like an underwriting.
Underwriting. We'll never go away.
We'll
be right back after this word from our
sponsor. Don't do that, but the future of advertising may be a lot of product placement.
Well, they say
so I think, like, if we're just
have another Coke, John. You know, I thought that was pretty tasty.
It was a lot better than Pepsi, Leo.
I don't like Pepsi.
I never liked that.
No, I like Diet Coke. It just tastes good.
Zero calories.
Coke one yet? Or zero?
And by the way, I really like vanilla
that's
Coke.
That's a much better ad than 20 Super Bowl ads because it makes you want a Coke.
It would
require some pretty good writing because I just watched.
No, not with us.
Well, not but broadcast television.
I'll give you an example.
No one knows that Coke just paid us $50,000 for that last 3 weeks ago.
So Robert Herron's about to buy a TV set, right? So what TV set are you going to buy?
Well, let's see.
See, the minute he names that TV set, that's the best
that's
ad
the
ever.
Point.
Is it money? No,
but
it's only good. Here's the problem, though.
And if you're going on and prattling on and on about television,
he's established his expertise.
Right,
so it's only good for the first couple. You know, as long as people feel like it's really what he wants to get.
Well, it's
fine. I mean, that's the thing. That's
we're not going to do that anyway.
I can't really afford. So I'm
well,
looking
if you
good
can't
value.
Afford it, maybe it's like if Samsung
nobody
gave
can.
Us a call and said, "Hey, you know, take a look at this thing."
Well, maybe
we'll give you guys $50,000 to run a cent. You know,
I'd really ideally like to have advertisers like Coke that don't conflict with what we talk about. Then there'd be no issue of editorial integrity.
Yeah,
I'm looking for Red Bull or Balls or somebody to come along and say. You know. And then we'll
the
talk
drinks.
Faster. Yeah, energy drinks.
talk
faster.
We're going to get some drug companies involved.
Anyway, take the poll because we do want to hear your feedback on that. And we haven't, first of all, somebody asked me, well, is this herald a change? And it doesn't herald anything because we don't know if anybody's out there buying advertising yet on podcasts. I mean, it's just starting right now.
We know that NPR sold it.
For a lot of money. The Acura,
$500,000?
Yeah, that's what got Leo jacked up.
That's when I thought, NPR? Wait a minute. I don't know what the amount was, but it was a significant amount.
It was something like that. But it was
I love listening to NPR.
Do you?
There's something very calming about it.
It's very calming.
I think they do classes, and I was thinking of taking classes on how to talk like NPR.
Oh,
you know,
easy.
They, you know,
we could do like that. The BBC without the accent.
Rule number one, don't talk over each other.
Yeah.
Be
I'm
very
terrible
polite.
At that.
Be very thoughtful.
I think it would sound dreadful.
Kind of wry.
I don't think this would be good. You have to listen to Daniel Shore.
Sound like the Gilmore Gang.
Now, do you want to remind people about the Zium? We have a sign-up ready to go.
Let's publicize the sign-up. Have you checked lately to see if anybody's signed up yet?
I can.
Yeah, why don't you see how many spaces? Total of 200.
We haven't really talked about it very much, so I think that it's been...
I might have mentioned it somewhere on my radio show or something.
Ooh. So what's the deal?
Well, people should go anyway. Here's the deal. If it's sold out, you can get on the wait list, so if it's shorter. And what we're going to do is we're going to open up the doors. If you're not there by 6:30, you know, we start at 7. If you're not there by 6:30, you know, then we're going to open the doors.
Are we charging for this?
No.
It's just
why don't we charge $5?
We should. It's costing us money to actually pay for staff at the ZM, but we'll
have a donation box.
Yeah, there you go.
Here's the deal. If you want to give us
church, come
pass
on.
The hat.
We'll pass the hat.
Why don't we have like a guy with a stick and a box on the end of it?
I love that. You ever get one that jingles it in front of you?
Yeah.
I'll play the organ and a little interlude.
But if you go to, it's in the... Pixelcore.com, in the events.
Just go to pixelcore.com and click the events on the left.
Yeah, and you'll
see
one
of the events.
And we'll put you on a waiting list if it's
sign up.
If it fills up. Just sign up, and it will tell you that it's sold out if you get there.
Please don't sign up unless
you're really coming.
You're really going to be at Macworld Expo January 10th.
That's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
You should have a formula for overage because there will be an X number of
people. We have a formula.
We have a formula.
They know how to do that kind of thing. These guys have got it down. And it's the day of Steve Jobs' keynote, so I presume we will have much to talk about. We're going to get some Apple experts to come by, and some other interesting people are going
to. I think I'm out that week. I'm going to.
Are you
going to Tahoe?
Oh,
recovering from CES.
Yes. Yes. I will be exhausted.
Now, I don't know what we're going to do for CES coverage next week, but I think we might do a Skype from CES, because you're going to be the CES show floor. Maybe Norton. John and I will be home, and you and
I'll
Norton.
I'll be cleaning my office.
Yeah, John will be cleaning his office, and we'll get a progress report. So we'll do that one by Skype, definitely. And then we'll be live.
I'll be knee-deep.
January 10th.
Have some tidbits.
From the Zoom. I want to thank our friends at AOL Radio. This is the one commercial we do. It's kind of like a commercial. It's not really. I mean, we don't get any money
thank
for
you.
It.
Provide that
thank
bandwidth.
You. It's a big know, the thank thing, you. Like, the role that, you know, Delta Airlines provided transportation.
Yeah,
blah,
it's like
blah,
that. Blah. Support for this podcast provided by AOL Radio at AOLmusic.com. I listen, so should you.
I keep one of their
how much is that worth?
It's probably worth more than the price of admission.
No, they very kindly provide us with the bandwidth. Anything else that we need, any business that we need to take care of? I think that's it. Kenji, it's been great having you.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck with the Center for Homeland Defense and Security.
One of my many projects.
What else do you do?
I actually have my own company also called Edge Runner.
Edge Runner.
That's interesting.
Mm. We do technology consulting and things like that.
So. And, of course, Alex Lindsay with the Pixel Core. Thank you for your help, and thanks to the Pixel Core folks who provided the video. How do you like the fact that there's nothing behind us?
Yeah, and I,
it compresses well.
Yeah, it really compresses well. And I really want to thank the Golden Gate Studios.
Golden Gate Productions who provided us with this.
This is such an awesome stage. Yeah. And if people are in, especially in the Bay Area, thinking about this kind of work, it's just such a fantastic
this
location.
Has always been a good place to do stuff.
Yeah, it's a TV station, so it's really like, you know, we really have, I mean, it's not a TV station, but we've got great lights and we've gotten great support, and we really appreciate the help that Golden Gate has
provided. The monkey cam.
Yeah.
Hey, did you manage to get one of the video files down to like something like under 80 megs? I heard people raving
it's
about
almost the same size as the audio.
I sat down.
I downloaded the wrong file.
I sat down. The black really makes a big difference.
Yes. So that's, okay. We expect this one to be pretty small.
Yeah, this one should be pretty small. Also, I got really aggressive. I'm going to probably do a tutorial.
Let's go home.
We're going to start doing tutorials next year.
Yeah. Geeking out.
We're going to start doing tutorials next year that we're going to put up on. Related to Twit as to like how we're doing different pieces, but
one
of the things.
Yeah,
so I really got into compression. So I spent a couple hours playing around with it. What I do is I compress 1 minute and then multiply it by that, so I know how big it's going to be, and then I play with it and I decide how good it is, and so I got it all the way down. And the big thing was just increasing, you know, temporal compression. So anyway, it's with the black, it works really well.
We're working for a megabyte a minute. That's our goal.
That's when we know we've made it.
That's pretty darn good.
Okay.
I was going to say.
But even the thing,
pixels just
even the H260, even the big one, the 640 by 480 was we're not very far from mega minute for the iPod version, and the H264 was only like 150 megs. So that's the first one we did was 700
mega minute.
It's good.
That's
work.
Like the one horsepower per cubic centimeter.
It still looks pretty MP3s good.
There are a lot of people who would love to know how that's done.
So I'll put it up. We're getting there, and we will tell the world. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Stay out of the rain. Happy New Year. Another Twit is in the can.
We never got to the predictions.
We tried. Did you have some predictions?
I had one. We'll
What's your prediction?
Like wireless HD for being able to transmit.
You think that'll happen at CES?
I hope so. They've been demonstrating
once,
a couple of different proprietary technologies, but I think doing it over like a G network or a super G network.
I think that'd be very cool.
Be able to just
but weren't they doing it? Wasn't
the bandwidth there?
But didn't LG or somebody do that a couple of years ago?
The thing is, if they do it digitally, you're going to run into all the DRM. They'd be so scared of
that's
people
why
just using
that.
I say wireless iPod in January.
Wireless iPod?
I'm hoping.
Wireless what? Wireless to what?
Like Wi-Fi. Like I can walk into Starbucks and download movies onto my iPod.
I want an iPod A with an FM radio.
You can do that on Audible with audio.
Just download
now.
Before you go.
On a palm. You can download. You can,
right.
Audible's doing that.
Problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.
Round the horn.
Death. Firewall.
Round the horn.